Chapter 3. You're counting on me to do what? Amelia woke up the following day in her new house in Potomac, Maryland, and started her new life in Washington, D.C., as one of its new leaders. Upon awakening, she wondered why she still had difficulties accepting her new professional reality. Her previous positions as a founder and CEO of one of the most successful companies in the world should have better prepared her. Taking on the complex and sometimes thankless task of heading up a monolithic government agency like the United States Agency for International Development, better known by the acronym USAID, should also have prepared her for joining the new president's cabinet as the Secretary of State. There was a difference. If she didn't understand it by now, this experience would straighten her out. After all, she seemed to come to grips with it yesterday, so she wouldn't let this new morning dampen things. She and Pete were to meet with President-elect John Block in the White House this afternoon for a joint post-election greeting and indoctrination with the outgoing president. The president-elect was to discuss transition issues with the previous administration's leaders and staff. Amelia was looking forward to all of this. After Amelia finished her morning routine, she headed downstairs to the kitchen for coffee. Before she arrived, she heard some voices. Amelia knew that one of the voices was Pete's, who had stayed overnight to provide company on her first night in a new house. She also saw a woman busy at work on the range top. She turned around to greet Amelia as she entered the kitchen. Pete introduced her. "Amelia, this is Vivica Stewart, and she will be overseeing the cooking, shopping, cleaning, and other household chores, and, in effect, running the place. Her husband, Sam, is in the garden at present. He maintains everything outside the house, including the landscaping and maintenance issues." Amelia told Vivica that it was a pleasure meeting her. She then reached for a cup of coffee that Pete had made for her and walked over to the large floor-to-ceiling picture window to see Sam working in the rose garden. Standing there, she caught his attention. She waved to him, and he waved back. Amelia was beginning to feel comfortable about her new home. Vivica asked Amelia what she would like for breakfast, and Amelia asked for options. Smiling, Vivica said her previous family had high expectations for meal selection, and she keeps the larder well-stocked for almost any request. Amelia said, "Well then, how about a ham and cheese omelet and a piece of toast?" "That would be lovely, Vivica," Pete said, "to make it for two." Vivica smiled and went to work preparing breakfast. Amelia went about setting the kitchen table with dishes and silverware. This morning was starting nicely. Later that morning, Pete and Amelia left and headed to Washington and the White House. She had often been to the White House, but Pete had not. Amelia was looking forward to showing Pete everything. She generally loved being a tour guide. When they arrived, they passed security and entered the West Wing lobby. Amelia was surprised to see President-elect John Block coming down the West Hall himself. He embraced Amelia and gave Pete a masculine shoulder hug. He guided them back to the West Hall, heading to the West Wing and Oval Office. When they entered the Oval Office, the current president stood up from his desk, crossed the room, and shook hands with Amelia and Pete. He said, "You two and John are starting on a fantastic journey that I am sure you will enjoy if you all approach it correctly." "I am sure you will. I am confident that the president-elect has done a marvelous thing in appointing both of you for the Secretary of State leadership. John told me you have also selected David Stanford as your Deputy Secretary for Management and Resources. He's another excellent choice. I know him well, and I tried at one time to talk him into taking the Secretary of State position, but he was busy making mega millions in artificial intelligence. I asked John how he snatched him, and he gave you all the credit, Amelia. And he said that, Mr. President, he did, and I believe him. You can do what many of us cannot, but you would never take credit for that. It's what makes you special." And with that, the president returned to his desk and sat down. He continued, "I am thrilled that my two presidential terms are up now. I relish the job, but it takes a lot out of you. It's why everyone says of presidents that they age so quickly while in office. It will help you, though, if you can adopt and adapt quickly and with an attitude of wishing to serve the country and help your people rather than seeking adulation from them for the benefit of your ego. The ego is what will genuinely make you suffer or even kill you in the end. I found that out towards the termination of my first 4 years. My ego was in firm control of me then. But I became convinced that my ego's advice was almost always faulty and dangerous, and it feasted on my spiritual strength. I took the advice of a far smarter man and pushed my ego back under my conscious control. It was the best advice I ever received. Emilio listened to the president and asked him, "Who gave you this advice, Mr. President?" "It was David Stanford. It was when I called him into this office to offer him the Secretary of State position 2 years ago. He turned me down and then offered me the ego advice I just told you about. Now you know why you have decided to establish your State Department with the leadership team you are proposing. And I can tell from the look on your face that David Stanford did not tell you about this previous meeting with me. He did not, Mr. President. And I am unsure how to interpret that. Don't consider it a negative thing, Amelia. I know this man very well. He is honorable and will eventually tell you when he considers it appropriate. He always has a reason for what he does. You do seem to know him very well, Mr. President," Pete said. "I do know him very well, Pete. One of my advisors told me that David Stanford was among the smartest and wisest people they knew. I needed some proper advice on artificial intelligence, so I asked him to come here and benefit from his knowledge and wisdom. We had several meetings, and they were all beyond placing a value on the information he gave me." "Thank you, sir," Pete said. The president-elect thanked the president and suggested they head to the cabinet room to continue the transition discussions. They all thanked the president and filed out of the room, led by the current president's chief of staff and a senior employee of the White House Transition Coordinating Council, established by the current president several months before the election. When they walked into the cabinet room, 14 appointees for President John Block's proposed cabinet, including Vice President-elect Mary Farrow, were sitting at the conference table. Various employees of the General Services Administration will assist the proposed cabinet appointees in acquiring the knowledge they will need when they assume their cabinet positions. Everyone at the table was introduced to everyone else, and most of those present were familiar with each other. When lunchtime came about, they went to the Navy mess to have lunch together and then returned to the cabinet room to finish the day's agenda. After a hectic day, Pete drove them back to Amelia's new home on the Potomac. David was there when they arrived, and Amelia was quite surprised when he walked out of the house to greet them when they drove up. She turned to Pete and said, "You didn't tell me that David would be here." Pete replied while smiling, "You didn't ask. Besides, I figured that we would want to fill David in on the result of the transition talks." "You are right, Pete, and I particularly want to talk with David because of what the president said about him today." They departed the car, greeted David, and walked into the foyer. Amelia suggested they go to the library, which had a fully stocked bar, and they started a happy hour there. After Amelia prepared the drinks, they sat on the two couches facing each other, with a cocktail table between them. Pete and David sat on one, and Amelia on the other. Amelia started the conversation. "We had a very productive day, David, and learned much about committing ourselves over the next 4 years. But one of the most exciting things I learned was that you were offered the job of Secretary of State and turned it down. Why wouldn't you have told me about that offer? If I had told you about that, Amelia, you would have been overly influenced by that previous offer. You needed to be more objective about determining how I might perform under your leadership. You would be concerned that I might be the better choice for the secretary position. However, I am convinced you will be the better Secretary of State than Pete or me. I never wanted to be in the leadership of the State Department, nor do I now. I have my reasons for this stance, and I will let you know what they are in due time, but not now. Why are you not concerned that my hearing this would convince me that I can't trust you? That is your decision, Amelia. But do you think I didn't know you would eventually find out about this? It wasn't then and isn't now a secret. And I felt that if you knew about the offer when we first met, you wouldn't even have considered offering me this deputy secretary job. It would help if you got to know me first and considered my appropriateness for the job. That's why I didn't tell you." Pete had stayed quiet during this discussion. Amelia looked over at him. He cleared his voice and said, "You are not going to be surprised that I agree with David. But if you have a problem with him about not telling you about his being previously offered the job under the previous administration, you also have a major problem with me as well. I knew about this because he told me the night we first met. He said he had come to the Bahamas because he was told you would be here and wanted to meet with you privately. I suggested that David not let you know he had been offered the secretary position and turned it down. I know you well enough that you would not consider offering him a lesser position. Was I right? Probably, Amelia said, almost muttering. But what do I now know about this situation? Pete answered. I don't think it is a situation, Amelia. It's just a thing that you have to make up your mind about. Do you want David or not, as part of our team? The decision is yours. The critical element you are deciding over is the one you would have had earlier. David did not lie to you, and I advised him not to say anything until you decided to become secretary. And I am not part of the consideration. If you tell David the offer is withdrawn, it won't affect me. Except we will have to deal with losing an excellent team member. I've already made up my mind on this subject, Pete. I still want, even need, David on the team. But if you two gang up on me again by not letting me know what any issue is actually about, you can both go. But such a decision will result in this. I will also resign from the State Department at the same time, and I'll kick your asses off this so-called team. Before I depart, thank you, Amelia. David said, I am sorry that I did not inform you initially that the President offered me Secretary of State, and it won't happen again. Don't worry about it, David. My ego pushed me to a place I didn't want to be, and I thought I was beyond that. I wasn't. But I would appreciate it if you only assume I could make a mistake and not correct it. But this conversation raises an even bigger and more important question for me. Why would you turn the appointment down when offered by the current president and then want to take a subordinate position from me? It defies logic as far as I am concerned. David silenced for a second or two, and then he answered. I'm going to take us to a place that you might find strange so that I can answer you honestly, which of course I must. I turned down the position because it was meant for someone else, and I knew that. I live by spiritual guidance rather than physical urgings. All souls must evolve spiritually to fulfill the desire and directive of our Creator. We are all born, and then we die. Then we reincarnate as often as necessary, for us to evolve to the creative level desired by God or the Creator or a supreme force that I prefer to call supreme consciousness. David then paused to let his words permeate his friend's senses. Amelia and Pete sat with their mouths open, wanting to say something, but they could not think of the words to appropriately respond to what they had just heard. Pete was the first to attempt it. This astounds me, David. I'm not religious, but I'm not anti-religious either. I guess I was attracted to your personality when I met you and figured we thought the same. And I guess I felt that Amelia did as well. David replied. Pete, nothing I said was intended as a religious statement. It's not that it would have been bad if it was, but it is not. All who are religious might also be spiritual. But many who are spiritual may not be religious. The difference is that many who adhere to religions exist in a way that often overrides being spiritual. However, a truly spiritual person cannot be anything else. There is a specific danger of confusing both belief systems. The threat is called cognitive dissonance, which refers to mental distress when holding contrary beliefs. Amelia stopped her silence by saying, David, what is this all about? Since I met you, you've said that you wanted to serve alongside me, but at no time have you said that being spiritual or religious had anything to do with it. Has something changed? Are you suggesting that we become religious or spiritual zealots? No, Amelia. David answered, far from it. The only thing I ask from you and Pete is that we become friends, and in the spirit of that friendship, hear me out as we proceed on our new quest to create the best friendship and the most successful State Department we can. Amelia suggested, I can't deny that I like the essence of what you are saying, David. I only need to get over the feeling that we are embarking on a crusade rather than simply taking on a job. Would that be a bad thing, Amelia? No, it isn't. But it is a foreign thought, David. What do you think, Pete? Pete responded, I think, perhaps, that it may be about time that the United States takes on an aspect of being on a crusade. When I think of it, it seems that we have just been taking care of problems for decades and not attempting to get rid of them for good. I, for one, am willing to consider the alternative of having the most powerful country in the world solve global problems instead of just handling them. I vote to let David tell us what he thinks might solve the static aspect of world trends, such as wars and diseases. Very well said, Pete, David returned. You summed up in a few sentences what my objectives are, and I doubt that I could personally convince the United States to do what it takes to begin such a quest. I couldn't convince the leadership of our government, the major non-government organizations, and the Fortune 500 companies, or those who aspire to be Fortune 500 companies, to get behind such a quest. But I am pretty certain you could, Amelia. You've got to be kidding me, David. Why do you think I have such an advantage? You have personally accomplished a lot. You are a self-made multimillionaire, a young, charismatic, and handsome man who speaks with captivating wisdom. People would listen to you. Thank you, Amelia, but you are incorrect in your final analyses of someone who knows what it takes to get this quest underway and guide it to many triumphant victories. I am one relatively young man who has made a fortune and may be able to speak with the wisdom of a self-made millionaire, and that's it. But the truth is, you have far exceeded me in founding a large, successful company with your late husband, and then went on your own to make it one of the most prosperous firms in the country. Next, you have far more charisma than I do, and your brand is globally recognizable and accepted. Because you are a few years older, you speak with a wisdom and maturity I cannot match in our society. You are a beautiful and mature woman who can still be taken seriously in business and diplomatic circles. You excelled in corporate business and then headed USAID, one of the largest federal agencies that work with non-government agencies on the planet. And Amelia, there is another bright star in your crown that I do not have. You have social standing and influence among your peers that I could not likely attain, and certainly haven't attained at this time in my life. Consider these few accolades, and more not mentioned, and you will see why you are the only one who can lead us in this quest to improve the State Department and the United States and have a substantial positive impact on global affairs as well. Amelia looked over to Pete, who smiled, nodded, rubbed his head and spoke. I have to agree with David. He is voicing things that I have always thought about you, Amelia. And I think you know that. You have said that you couldn't exist without me to help you. But I do help you, besides loving you, of course, because of all the things David just said and much, much more. Okay, guys, I know when I am overruled and frankly overwhelmed. So far, neither of you has asked me to agree with anything I couldn't agree with. So, let's agree to disagree a little and get on with it. Both men gave their version of hallelujah. Pete jumped up and went to the library bar to refill their drinks. They spent the rest of the evening discussing ideas for changes they would like to consider when they start work at the State Department. Amelia suddenly realized that she had yet to consider making significant changes to the State Department as the Secretary of State. She had been far more concerned about failing as one. That was crippling her thoughts. She now understood that David had brought about the first miracle for change that the three of these friends would bring about in the future.